Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Off the Wall podcast here from the office of yours truly, Chris Sheeran, at Yes's palatial estate at an undisclosed location. Joe Auriemma is with me as always.
It's an absolute pleasure to be
Chris. Thank you very much. It always is. You know, we dress down. We don't have to worry about. Actually, you know what? We're both wearing tuxedos.
That's true.
You know,
I'm wearing a tuxedo T-shirt.
We try to keep this. We try to keep this as formal as possible when we do this.
Right.
Not a lot to talk about. You know, nothing going on at all.
The New York sports landscape
is
really quiet.
It's dead.
As always.
It's absolutely dead. Dormant. You know, we might as well just go to the Dresden because this place is dead anyway.
I feel like we work the Kansas City beat.
Of course, we're being facetious. A lot to talk about, and we're going to start with the Giants. I know, you know, Jorge Posada walked away, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, we got to talk about the New York Football Giants. Now, I will take it on the chin here, and I will say that, you know, at the beginning of the season, both of us were not very kind to the New York Giants when it came to predicting their final tally of wins and losses.
Right, you had a 9-7.
I had them at 9-7,
which actually was their record.
Which happened, but I didn't think they'd be a first place 9-17. I never said that, so I'm not going to take credit for saying, "Oh, well, they were 9-7," and I said they were going to be 9-7.
Right, no, and I said 8-8. So I mean,
and Joey said 8-8. So we were right around where we thought they would be because we knew they had, you know, some firepower on offense, and they could probably win some games with Eli Manning. But I never thought in a million years that this guy would have the season that he had, you know, this year. And guess what, Giant fans? I'm not, you know, breaking any news here, but if the Giants don't have that guy at quarterback, they're not in Super Bowl 46 right now because he single-handedly won at least six games this season.
Oh, no, I agree.
By himself.
He's been absolutely amazing. There's no questioning Eli Manning as a quarterback anymore. When I think of the top quarterbacks, you know, in previous years, people might have put Phillip Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger ahead of him. And I'll say this, if he wins this Super Bowl, even if he doesn't win this Super Bowl, I think he's a top four quarterback in the league. You know, Aaron Rodgers, but I give you Aaron Rodgers, Breeze, and Brady, and he's right there with those guys now.
If he beats Brady, I think he knocks Brady to four. That's twice he'll beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. And I understand that Brady has won three, and I'm not taking anything away from the guy. Talk about single-handedly winning games. It goes back to the head of the snake. Okay, you cut the head of the snake off. You don't have to look any further than the Indianapolis Colts. That was a 13-3 team last year with Peyton Manning. What were they this year without him?
Oh, yeah.
It cost Jim Caldwell his job. He's out.
All right. I
now,
totally
I know
agree.
The GMs were fired. The Polians are gone. And when a new GM comes in, he wants a new coach. I get it. But when you cut the head of the snake off, especially when it's a guy like Peyton Manning, your team is not going to do well. And everybody always has this argument. Do you really need a good quarterback to win the NFL? Well, I point to Super Bowl 46. Who's in the Super Bowl?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. You need someone that's going to lead the team. You need someone that's going to be the guy. And these two franchises epitomize two franchise quarterbacks. They have the guys that are going to lead them to where they're at right now.
And, you know, I really think this Super Bowl, I know Eli already has one and an MVP under his belt. And, you know, there's been debate if he wins this one. Does he have more clout? Is he better than his brother? Pump your brakes. Peyton Manning only has one Super Bowl win. But without Peyton Manning, the Colts never get resurrected.
And he's a four-time MVP. He's a four-time league MVP.
Just stop.
No.
Please stop.
The difference is,
I know it's for discussion. I know it's so Skip Bayless continues to have a job. because Tim Tebow was no longer in the news.
My whole thing with this story.
But come on.
My whole thing with this story, Chris, is that let Eli play his career out. Let Peyton finish his career out. And you know what? You don't need to compare them. Because when it comes down to it, Eli might have the better postseason record, which he currently does.
He does.
He's 7-3.
Peyton's 9-10.
And Eli could be, at the end of this, 8-3 with two Super Bowls. He could be 2-for-2, which is more than Peyton
could
say.
But I think you look at it with a broader scope.
They could both be Hall of Famers when
right.
it's all said and done.
And think about Archie Manning.
Of course.
A guy who was a great quarterback in his own right, just played on a really awful team, the Saints. Think about as a father.
Two number one picks. Two Super Bowl MVPs. It's unbelievable.
And he could have two Hall of Fame sons.
It's unreal. And they said that Cooper is just as good as the two brothers.
But he got hurt. And you know what? You know, Archie Manning did his penance plus with the Saints. And now his two sons, I really think, are paying off the dividends. And you know what? They're surrounded. You got to give Eli all the credit in the world. Because when the Giants defense basically took a dirt nap, okay, Jonathan Goff went down, Terrell Thomas went down, they never played a
Sintem
game during the
down.
Season, Clint Sintem went down.
Tryon went down, I mean
all these guys, okay, so you give Perry Fuel a little bit of a pass, and I know I was hard on Fuel, but you know what, that Redskin game, before the must-wins started to happen, with the Jets and the Cowboys to get into the postseason, you can't tell me, if you're a Giant fan and you're a lifelong Giant fan, that watching that game and watching that defensive effort didn't physically make you sick to your stomach. Watching the Giant defenses, as I've had from the mid-80s to now, besides Rod Rust, and I brought that up with Kevin Kernan and his read and react defense, watching that Redskin game was one of the worst defensive performances by a Giant team I've ever seen in my life. Okay? And that's barring the 2007 year that they went to the Super Bowl the first 2 weeks under Spagnuolo when they gave up over 80 points. That was a travesty too. But nothing compares to that Redskin game. Because think about this for a second. The Washington Redskins, under 500 for the year. I think they had 5 wins. 2 of them were against the Giants. 2. They couldn't beat Rex Grossman. Think about that for a second. They could beat Aaron Rodgers. They could beat Tom Brady.
They couldn't beat Rex Grossman, Charlie Whitehurst, and they almost lost to Matt Moore, by the way.
Oh, good.
But you know what? That's all in the past.
I know it is.
Let me tell you something. These guys got healthy all at the right time. It's all about, and you know what? What amazes me about this run, Chris, is that they've won 5 in a row, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They lose any one of those games. Going back to the Jet game, they're not in this position at all. They all they had to do was lose one game. That Jet game propelled this team into a stratosphere.
The cruise play.
The 99-yard touchdown play propelled them. Then the defensive effort and the game against the Cowboys put them in a completely different stratosphere, and then it was, we're off. The Atlanta game, we're back. Our front four is healthy. Tuck is back. Umanura is back. Pierre-Paul is just continuing to be a beast. And let me tell you, it makes a difference when you have 4 healthy guys, 4 unbelievable guys up front, that when you don't have to, you know, throw all these blitz packages and rush all these, you know, 5 or 6 guys, when you can just rush 4, get pressure on the quarterback and drop 7, it makes a world of difference.
You're absolutely right. And you know what? You could actually call that front 4 part of the secondary, because without that healthy front 4, the secondary and the linebackers were exposed.
Yeah.
You cut down that time with that healthy front 4 on any quarterback. They've proven it. Matt Ryan, what did he do?
Nothing.
Aaron Rodgers, they were relentless on Rodgers. I think maybe they had 2 or 3 sacks against them. But in that game, and the one in the regular season. If you rush these guys, and Eli Manning included, if you get pressure on these guys, they're not going to have a good game.
And I'll say this. Two things about that point.
By the way, before you say that, Rutgers is looking for a new head football coach.
Oh, they fired Schiano.
No. Schiano is going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, according to Adam Schefter.
Really?
Yes.
He's taking the head coaching job.
Yes.
Wow.
The Bucs.
What are the Bucs doing?
I have no idea.
What are the Bucs doing?
So he could bring his chop that tree down mentality to the Buccaneers.
Okay, good breaking news right there.
Well, you know what? For Schiano.
Good for him.
Good for him, because the Big East is going
down quick.
It's going to hell in a handbasket. It is. All these teams are jumping ship. What's the future of the Big East with Rutgers? I mean, he built it up, but...
He still couldn't win a league title in a soft league.
Anyway.
Going back. I have to say, the one thing that I've been really impressed with, Michael Boley is healthy. Chase Blackburn, who was folding laundry when he got the call in week 13, he's been pretty good in the middle.
No, he's been great.
He's been pretty good. And the one thing that I've noticed is that the Giants have played teams with good tight ends over these last 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Dustin Keller, Jason Witten, Tony Gonzalez, JerMichael Finley, and Vernon Davis. And other than Vernon Davis, you know,
the Niners
playing
had
well,
nothing else.
The Niners had nothing else. But they have taken those good tight ends, and they've stopped them for the most part. Those linebackers and safeties have really silenced these good tight ends.
And that's going to be good for their psyche going up against, if Gronkowski's healthy, and Gonzalez.
Right. And
sorry, Hernandez.
Hernandez. And the one thing I will say about putting pressure on Eli Manning took a beating in that 49ers game. And one thing that he did that I hadn't seen in this playoffs, he took a beating and kept getting back up, and he was poised. And he made the passes that he needed to make when he needed to make them. The Manningham touchdown pass is exactly, you know, 3rd and 15. They went for it. This guy threw for over 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. He managed the game, did not turn the ball over. And you know what? That to me is one of the more impressive quarterback performances after taking the beating that he took.
There's no more debate. Eli Manning is an elite quarterback, okay? And what the hell was he supposed to say on Michael Kay's show when he was asked if he thinks he's an elite quarterback? No, you know, I think I'm maybe top 20.
And by the way, Trent Dilfer openly laughed when Michael Kay brought that up to him after Eli Manning was on. Openly laughed on the air. No, Eli Manning is not an elite quarterback. Now, that guy is now backtracking, and every time I see him on TV now, oh no, he's a top four quarterback in the league.
Eli Manning made Victor Cruz a household name. Eli Manning throws to Mario Manningham and Hakeem Nicks, and a tight end who basically wasn't even on the team last year in Ballard.
How about Bear Pascoe? Caught a touchdown in the championship game.
His first catch is a touchdown catch in the NFC title game.
I mean, Heinoski, he knows how to... I've never seen a guy other than Phil Sims had great pocket presence with the Giants.
He had tremendous pocket presence. Phil Sims, Kevin Green used to say of Phil Sims... And you know the beatings Kevin Green used to lay down on quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And he loved Sims because he said he would hit Sims and Sims would get up and go, look forward to seeing you again. That's the definition of the difference between quarterbacks, you know, Sims and going back and quarterbacks now.
And you know what? That's what I'm trying to say about Eli Manning. This guy has really good pocket presence. He moves in the pocket very nicely. He does just enough to give himself enough time to complete a pass, to get to the open receiver, to create situations. And the ultimate prime example in that 49er game is he shuffled to the left, shuffled to the left, shuffled
He's
to the left.
He's been doing that all year.
throws it to Ahmad Bradshaw and takes a beating from three 49ers.
Yeah.
That was so impressive.
A 12-yard loss, and it ends up being a 6-yard gain.
Yeah. That's the maturation of Eli Manning, if you ask me. Knowing when to get rid of the ball, knowing not to, unlike Joe Flacco, knowing not to hold on to the ball for too long, and knowing where he is in the pocket and where the pressure is coming from.
I'm not saying that I expected this, because I didn't. And if you say, if you think the Giants at the beginning of the season were a Super Bowl team, you're Merlin, Kreskin, and Karnak rolled into one. Because there, nothing pointed to this team being in this position that they're in right now. And, you know, I'm a negative Nelly when it comes to the Giants. I am. It's my persona here around the office. Everybody thinks of me that way. And that's fine, because I've been disappointed way too many times by this team. Not, you know, in big games, but when they start off the way they did 6-2, and then they're 7-7 fighting for their playoff lives. Okay? That's why I have this, all right, yeah, they're 6-2. But I'll wait another couple weeks, because they have a tough schedule, and I don't know what's going to happen. I have faith in them. I'll be there. I'll be front and center watching them. And I'll take the hits, okay? I thought that Coughlin needed to go really early on in the season. The only reason I bring this up is because one of our coworkers said, oh, you Giant fans are hot stuff jumping on the bandwagon now. Listen, I've been on the bandwagon since 1986, okay? So don't call me. Don't say that I'm on the bandwagon. And I do get down on my team a lot, but that's my right, okay? I can get down on my team. I could be critical of my team. I could have an opinion. What is this, Russia? I could have an opinion about my team. And, you know, when they went from 6-2 to 7-7, my opinion wasn't glowing. But they impressed the hell out of me, beating the Jets and beating the Cowboys and doing it the way they did it. And then when they took it to the Falcons the way they did, they really opened my eyes. I said, wow, this defense is back. The front four is back. But I'm not going to get overexcited, because they got to go into Green Bay next week. They could win. Said it. They could win. But I wasn't overzealous like most Giant fans, beating their chest and saying, we're going to go in there and win.
I actually was one of those Giant fans. I thought that the first performance showed that they could beat the Packers. The second performance to me was, you know, the Packers, they sat that team that last week. I didn't think Aaron Rodgers was gonna come out firing on all cylinders. I felt like that Giants front four was healthy on all cylinders. And I got to say, I was very confident going into Green Bay.
This was my point. I thought Coughlin was the issue until they beat the Patriots, which, by the way, which is New England's last loss.
Ten games ago, yeah.
10 in a row, okay? Kind of eerie how everything is setting up here.
I know.
The same way in 2007. But the Giants, after that game, went to 6-2. And in that locker room, hoisted Tom Coughlin up in the air. That, to me, spoke volumes.
About what they think of this guy.
They might not like his rules. They might not like the meetings and being on time. They respect this guy. They respect the hell out of him. If they didn't, they wouldn't be putting together the run they're putting together right now. Tom Coughlin is not the problem.
Victor Cruz was in here several weeks ago, and he told all of us, When this topic was broached, he told all of us off camera that the team is fully 100% behind Tom Coughlin. And they said that they respect the heck out of him, and he's the old type coach that these guys love. And one thing that really got my attention was when Antrell Roll, who has been critical of Tom Coughlin, came out and said, there is no way this guy, look, I might have been critical of him, but there's no way this guy should have been on the hot seat. He's a heck of a coach.
Well, there you go. That's all you need to hear, because Roll hated this guy when he first got here.
Yeah.
And he said that.
Yeah.
On Twitter, he said it.
He did.
And now he's like, you know, now we sit and we talk. It's an old school mentality, way of coaching that Coughlin has, and it's, you know, not something that these present time players are really used to. But as you can see, it works. Maybe it doesn't work every year, but this is the second time in 4 years the guy has them in a position to win a Super Bowl. Okay?
So he's
got to be doing something right.
By the way, if he wins the Super Bowl, the Giants just need to tell him, forget about all the hot seat talk, forget about all that. You tell us when you want to go.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that.
You tell us when you're ready
we're
to
not
step
gonna,
down.
Yeah, we're not going to force you to step down. I'm taking the hit, okay? I really am. Because I am down on this team every once in a while. And I'll be the first one to say I was wrong. And I'll be the first one to say, you know, Perry Fuel needs a bigger pass than maybe I was giving him because of all the injuries. Because when he has all the...
It's very easy to be a defensive coordinator when you can tell those guys in the front four, go get the quarterback.
Yeah, but when he has all of his ingredients in the stew, he's who he is.
Another guy that needs to get some props here is Jerry Reese, by the way.
Hey.
When the Eagles are going out and they're signing everybody under the sun and the Giants didn't make a move and lost Steve Smith and lost, you know, their tight end and lost everybody. And you know what? Jerry Reese stood pat and said, we're going with what we're going with.
Yeah. You got to give him credit. A team that hardly made any moves, David Boss. Who else?
I'll tell you this. It's true. The signings that he made a couple of years ago are actually starting to come to fruition.
Canty.
Now. The Canties, the Rocky Bernards.
Rocky Bernard's played well. Been great.
I mean, these are guys that are really playing very well right now.
And Antonio Pierce on ESPN did a great job on his story. They did a story on the NASCAR package, which is what they call the front four. And when you look at it, they have... four defensive ends playing the defensive line. Think about it for a second. Tuck, Osi, Kiwanuka, who started as a DN
and
now is everywhere.
Yeah, he's their rover.
So you don't know where he's going to be.
Yeah.
Tollefson, who's surprisingly been good.
They got a nice rotation. They really do. And Osi's got to know that, even if he leaves, if he goes somewhere else at the end of the year, when it's all said and done, if he goes somewhere else, I feel like if he stays with the Giants, it's going to prolong his career a couple of years because...
Yeah, he doesn't have to do as much.
Right,
But the Giants should take care of this guy. I know they've had their issues, but look at the difference between having him on the field and not having him on the field this season.
And, to me, another big difference in Osi Umenyiora is the emergence of Jason Pierre-Paul. Because
he's just an unbelievable player.
Ozzy's always been criticized for not being able to stop the run. That's been his MO.
Yeah.
Now with Pierre Paul there and him, just he's an animal.
That
he's
guy's
an animal.
Everywhere.
He gets to the quarterback.
That, he proved that in the Saints game.
Yeah.
Down by 20 and he's making tackles 20
he's
yards
an
down
animal.
The field.
Getting to the quarterback, stopping the run the way that he stops the run. Now that takes pressure off Ozzy. That takes pressure off Osi. Mm-hmm. You know what they say to Osi now? We got a guy who can stop the run. We've been good. Go get the quarterback. That's what we need you to do.
And I completely agree with what you said. If he stays with the Giants and the Giants take care of him, his career gets extended a little bit. And the Giants, with a couple pieces that they could add on the defense, this could be a good defense for a very... very long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you're winning ball games with Aaron Ross, who couldn't cover anybody to save his life this year, come on, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And
you bring back Terrell Thomas?
With Jaquan Williams, he stepped it up.
Oh, yeah.
I've been really destructive with him, but he's really stepped it up. And, when the vets are coming out and saying, Jaquan's been doing a hell of a job, you got to give him props, especially the past couple of weeks. Blackburn has taken a lot of pressure off of him.
Yeah, I agree. I got to say this. The Giants' return game is still awful. Still awful. And I still cringe every time a punt or a kick comes at these guys.
I gotta tell you this, though. Blackman, they have him dead to rights on Madden. They have him dead to rights. I just got Madden 12. He's the punt returner.
He's got a 12 rating, I'm guessing.
He's averaging 2.5 yards of return.
You know what?
It's the same.
You know what? Just don't muff a punt. Just
catch
wait,
the ball.
Wave your arm.
You know what? I get on Aaron Ross all the time. Ball security. He didn't even fair catch. Aaron Ross, in the fourth quarter and in overtime, caught those punts. And as soon as he saw a possibility of getting hit, both arms went over the ball and he went down himself.
Right.
He was not going to be the one to cough up the ball.
No, I know.
Like Williams did.
I know.
He did an excellent job. I haven't heard that once and on any radio show, any television show. Aaron Ross should be given a lot of credit for what he did with those punt returns.
And the Giants having enough foresight to take Blackman out of the game and put... They went on gut there because Blackman was out of that game. And they went with Aaron Ross to try to give them a little bit more explosiveness.
And Joey, he would get them 6-7 yards and cradle that ball, not even getting hit, going down,
just taking
himself out as long as he held the ball because he knows he doesn't have to be the playmaker. Number 10, when he comes on the field, he's the playmaker.
Right.
He understands the role in that punt. Just get me as many yards as you can, go to the ground. And that's what he did, and he protected the ball. So kudos to Aaron Ross.
To me, the thing that is been very impressive about the Giants' special teams has not been the return game. Has been the play of Jaquan Williams, the play of Devin Thomas, the play of Greg Jones. These guys covering punts and kicks, they're very good. They're very good. They're a young core. You could see they're pumped to be out there. Devin Thomas has the right attitude. Did you hear what he said before and after the game? He said, I know I'm the fourth, fifth receiver on this team. So when I have a chance to make a play on special teams, especially with the way the weather was that day, I knew there were going to be chances because it was going to be sloppy.
Who used to wear 15?
Well, Hostetler.
You know, he played what?
He played special teams, yeah.
And you remember the punt block he got.
Oh, against the Eagles. You got to love it, baby. I remember that.
Just goes to show. And listen, the 15 is just a coincidence. I wanted to throw it out there just, you know, for the Giant fans.
The other thing is, if Matt Dodge is on this team, they don't win that game in San Francisco.
Listen, I'm so glad you brought that up. And not only because Weatherford has been one of the MVPs of this team in the postseason. And you might scoff at that out there listening to this. But you know what? Field position is a huge, huge part of the game. And Weatherford has done a tremendous job the entire season. Not only the postseason, the entire season.
It's like Fiegels is back there again.
Thanks,
Mike Westhoff.
Obviously, when Tynes' kick went through the uprights, I had a big smile on my face. But my smile got even bigger with Weatherford's reaction. Because you have to think of this guy.
I'm going to the bleep Super Bowl.
Third straight title game. Two with the Jets, this one with the Giants, and it's the first time he's going to the Super Bowl. That, if you could bottle that reaction and sell it, it would be off the shelves in no time. The sense, when you see that reaction, the sense of accomplishment, like, wow, finally, I'm going, that just made my night.
You know what made my night? Watching the replay of the kick and seeing the low snap that Zach Diossi gave to him.
Yeah.
And the way that Weatherford took the ball.
Calmly,
put his finger on top of the ball and watching Tynes kick that ball through the uprights. Because let me tell you,
That had
2002 written all over it.
Trey Junkin.
That had 2002 written. The ball, low snap. He got it down.
Slick field,
and he got that ball down and just the way he needed to get it down.
Yep. And you know what? Tynes?
God, that guy gives me the shakes. That guy gives me the shakes.
But why? He hits big kick after big kick.
It amazes me. The guy almost missed an extra point earlier in the game, and now I'm over here saying, this guy's kicked us to two Super Bowls. He has kicked us. He's had two game-winning kicks in NFC Championship game history, and I still don't trust him. I was saying, when the Giants got the ball back, they're at the 23-yard line. I'm going, damn, this is...
Yeah,
I didn't say that, but oh my God, this is a 41-yard kick. Get closer. Get closer. Get to the center of the field.
And then the delay of game.
Oh.
Eli's yelling at Coughlin. Call timeout. Call timeout.
And that's the other thing, too, I wanted to mention. Eli, when the kicking unit is coming onto the field at the, they need to make the kick with 6 seconds left, Eli had enough presence of mind to clock the ball after those guys went back to the sideline. That's, to me, that's the sign of a smart quarterback.
Yeah.
He sees the extra men coming on the field. They realize that it's not third down, fourth down. They run back off the field. Eli clocks the ball, and that's it. But he waited. He waited.
Before we move on really quick.
That was before the half.
I'm glad you brought this up, Eli, again, because I just wanted to slam home my point. With me, there's no debate. This guy is an elite quarterback. And if he goes out there and beats Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, he's top three.
Yeah. And
sorry, but he is. Now, depending, I think he's elite no matter what he does in this game because of what he's done to get the Giants to the point they're at right now. Without Eli Manning, they don't make the playoffs. They're not on this run. I don't care how good the defense plays. Without that guy at quarterback, they're not in the position.
Guy's a road warrior. He's a leader.
He is an elite quarterback. And winning this Super Bowl, which would be his second win over Tom Brady, makes him one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL.
And going back to a point that people have made.
There I said it.
Look, Peyton Manning, when he won his Super Bowl, he beat Rex Grossman. If Eli wins two, he's going to beat Tom Brady twice.
Twice. And who was the guy that Peyton couldn't beat?
Yeah. I mean, and Eli's gone through Aaron Rodgers. He's gone through Matt Ryan. He's gone through quarterbacks. He's gone through Tony Romo. I don't want to hear that comparison anymore.
Ugh.
He's gone through that. He's gone through Tony Romo.
Tony, go on vacation again to Cancun, okay? Work on your golf game. Do everything that Eli doesn't do, all right? I don't want to hear that either. Cowboy fans need to shut their trap when it comes to the quarterbacks because there's no comparison. That there is no comparison. Win a big game, then we'll talk. All right, so we go from the Giants, who could win their second.
Real quick, yes. What's your prediction?
In the Super Bowl?
Yeah. It's...
I think the Giants win. I do, because I think they beat them with a banged-up defense in Week 9. I know that there's 2 weeks to prepare, and I know Belichick and Eli has said this, that he'll have a lot more different kind of looks thrown at him because Belichick is good, excellent with his defensive schemes. But I just think where the Patriots have just as much offensive firepower as the Giants, they lack. They were one of the worst pass defense teams in the league. Granted, the Giants were too.
Yeah, no, I know.
But the Patriots don't have the front four that the Giants have. And that front four showed you in Super Bowl 42, if you do what they did to Brady in that game, how many points did the Patriots? The 18-0 Patriots, how many points did they score in that game?
14.
14 points.
14. And last week, this team that's on a 10-0 run, 10 straight run here, could have easily lost to the Baltimore Ravens. They were
Flacco, Ali Evans securing
the ball, tuck and roll away from being a Ravens Giants Super Bowl.
Absolutely right.
Joe Flacco threw for over 300 yards against this defense. If Joe Flacco's doing that, what is Eli Manning going to do?
And they had Julian Edelman covering Anquan Boldin.
I know.
Is Julian Edelman going to be covering Hakeem Nicks? Is he going to be covering Victor Cruz?
I know. I'm going I'm going to go with a 31-24 Giants victory.
I was going to say 31-20 Giants.
So we're right in the ballpark.
Yeah.
We're right there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we go from the Giants, who could be winning their second Super Bowl, according to our predictions, by the way, to a team and a guy who knows a thing or two about winning world championships, and that's Jorge Posada and the New York Yankees. The Yankees did a tremendous job back on Tuesday in the press conference room at Yankee Stadium, saying so long to the longtime catcher of the Bombers, 17 years. That's nothing to shake a stick at, especially when you're a catcher and you could catch for that long. Of course, he didn't catch the last year of his career. He did get in the game against the Angels, which they brought up, and he threw a runner out. The only guy who tried to steal on him, he threw him out. So I thought that was poetic justice for him because, Joe, you competed in your life. I competed in my life. It's tough. Now, I'm not comparing us to Jorge Posada, but we know when you compete, it's tough to take a back seat to maybe someone who just comes in and, you know,
right,
is competing with you for your position. So it was a tough year. You know, the Red Sox game where he took himself out of the lineup and, you know, he didn't want to bat ninth, and it was that whole controversy. I'm bringing all this up because I think this is something the Yankees are going to miss, and that's the fire that he brought. You know, Jack Curry talked about, you know, the honesty that reporters are going to miss at the locker room. And you could attest to that because you covered the locker room last year. But what I think fans are going to miss and what his teammates are going to miss is that fire he brought, that we need to win at all costs and a loss, no matter if it's in April or in October, stings with the same amount of force. I mean, that to me, and Andy Pettit said it the best. And I went through all the quotes that were sent out early in the week on Tuesday about Posada from, you know, his former manager, Joe Torre, to his former teammates. And Andy Pettit, I thought, hit the nail right on the head. When you play the way like Jorge played, when you lay it all on the line, when you have that passion, have that fire, you leave it all on the field. And when you play in New York City, the fans are going to rally around you. The fans are going to love you. And that love is going to last not only for your career, but for life. You come back into that stadium at any point, standing ovation.
Yeah, and he's earned it.
And here's a part of the quote. And it's about the fans. He handled all the victories and all the success with class and never made excuses for anything. This is Pettit. Fans love that. They love to see you be real and passionate. When you're like that in New York, you're going to be loved, that's for sure. Okay, now John Starks never won a championship. Okay? But when I read that quote, he's the first guy I thought of. He embodied this city. I mean, he hit a big three-pointer. The garden just
erupted.
19,000 people stood up.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember he had a big shot against the Heat and he turned to the camera and he pointed to New York and went like, you know, we put his finger across. Posada wasn't outwardly like that. You would never get like emotion from him on the field. But you knew it was inside him from his postgame stuff.
Hey man, hey, the two visions I'll always remember of Posada is 2003 against Boston, Game 7, you know, him going nuts after he hit the double, and the vision that I always have in my head is him and Pedro basically going at it,
yeah,
up in Fenway Park.
Oh yeah, how could you forget that?
You know,
yeah, Pedro going in my head, yeah,
yeah. I mean, Posada, that...
Who is Kareem Garcia?
That, to me, that is what Jorge Posada was all about. He was one tough SOB.
Yeah, and he was for his team, and that proved it. You know,
yep.
Exactly. Who's Kareem Garcia? He came to the team, I believe he came to the team late that year from the Indians, if I'm not mistaken.
I loved Kareem Garcia, yeah.
So, but he wore New York across his chest. And that prompted Posada to be on the top step of that dugout and basically calling out Pedro Martinez.
Oh, just amazing. Amazing.
So, yeah, I really think they're going to miss that. One thing, and I'm just joking here, one thing I won't miss is Hip Hip Jorge.
Oh, no, I won't either. Worst chant in baseball.
Worst chant. We could agree on that?
Oh, I hate that chant. But I'll say this. You know, sometimes, you know, I know he you know, isn't the same player he once was. But looking back on it, and you could say this about Derek Jeter, and you could say this about Mariano. When they officially leave, just like Posada has left now, you're just not going to understand how much you're going to miss them until they're gone. Chris, there's only 15 catchers, primary catchers, as their primary position in the Hall of Fame. There's only 15. I mean, that's a pretty elite class for the position that they play. And to me, Jorge was right there as dominant as a lot of those guys. The Yankees are going to, you know, to me, when it's all said and done, when at the end of the day, the Yankees are going to have three of those guys in there because it's going to be Dickey, it's going to be Berra, it's going to be Posada. I-Rod's going to be in there from this generation, and I think Posada and Piazza are going to be the three from this generation.
Let's not forget two this year. Two things. The pinch hit.
He was amazing.
That he was won amazing. The Yankees, the AL East, and his series against the Tigers.
It was amazing.
Which proved that the guy could still do it.
Of course.
But he just admitted, you know, when it came time to get himself ready again, he was just tired. He, you know, he just, 17 years is a long time.
Yeah.
Okay? Especially when you're catching at the major league level. And I just want to say, you know, I highly doubt Jorge Posada or anyone in his family listens to the podcast, but it was an honor and a privilege watching him these past 17 years. Jorge Posada, the best of luck in anything that you do. And hopefully someday he'll be a colleague at the Yes Network and we can throw him on the podcast. Baby steps.
Yeah, let's take baby steps here, Chris. Baby steps.
Oh, boy. I forgot, by the way, Bob Watson. He had something to do with it, too.
Yeah, big Bob Watson. I love them.
But I am off my soapbox. I just wanted to make that point.
No, and it's a valid point. It's a valid point. The Yankees have a rich history in catchers with Jorge and Thurman and Yogi and Bill Dickey. You know, Bob Guerin. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, no offense to Bob Guerin. You know, Rick Cerrone or any of those guys. But those four guys are the elite of the elite catchers. You know, you think about, you know, going back on Jorge's career, the 2003 season that he had where he was up for MVP and he hit 285 with 30 home runs, drove over 100 runs. That was a monster season out of him. A couple of years back when he hit 338 out of nowhere. I mean, he hadn't hit 300 in his career, hit 338. I mean, these are things that, you know, Jorge, you look back at the numbers and you're going to, and just look at his career and you say, wow, he really was one of the best catchers of this generation. And that's how I think people are going to remember him. They're going to remember him as an offensive tyrant in the middle of a lineup that, Chris, had big boppers throughout his entire career, but he's the one that kind of, without the protection of Jorge, a little bit further down that lineup, maybe those guys don't have the numbers that they have in their career. Just maybe. I mean, this guy hitting fifth, hitting sixth, hitting seventh, you know, and this guy basically being a 25 to 30 home run hitter every year, being the stabilizing force, being the hard-nosed catcher, being the brutally honest guy that the media could turn to, maybe that eased some of the pain of these other guys of playing in New York, because Posada would take the hits, he would take the lumps, but all he did was go out and play good baseball, and that's all you can say about, that's all you can say, and have enough respect for the guy to say at the end, when it's all said and done, I'm looking at this guy's career, and he truly was, as you said, a warrior.
All right, that's going to wrap up this edition of the Off the Wall podcast from my office.
Casa de Sheeran.
Yes, we will see you next week. We'll talk, I don't know. We'll see what happens next week because we have an off week with the Super Bowl. We will not be talking about the Pro Bowl, that's for sure, which takes place on the 29th this weekend. But Joe and I will be back next week to talk more, hopefully, about the Yankees and our trip to Tampa, by the way, which is a little over a month away. Can't believe it. It's here again.
Here again. Very exciting, folks.
But until next week, we appreciate you listening. And once again, if you like what you listen to, you could download the Off the Wall podcast. You could subscribe to it for free on iTunes. And you could also check it out, as you know, on yesnetwork.com. For Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. We'll see you next time.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and yesnetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.